Like, what, which community are you talking about? Skittles?
Nah. Because they'll say that, too. They'll say something about the LGBTQ. They'll say something about that. They'll say something. But they, the chat know what I'm talking about.
Damn, now you got me lost, too. But I only know about two communities.
Nah, this is the most powerful community in the world.
The Skittles community is the most powerful.
No, it's not. There's another country that has a white and blue flag with a star on it. No, it's not. It's not even close.
Oh, they own every damn thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, okay. Why don't he say something about derogatory about that? Why he don't rap that?
Oh,
he
no.
Want to create content. You told me he a content creator.
Hey.
Create some content.
They own everything, bro. You hear me? Behind every... Boy, if you was to peel back the layers, never mind. I ain't gonna leave that alone.
That's all I'm saying. See, people.
That was Chad Johnson, Ocho, and Shannon Sharp. Must have been recently on their podcast or their show. And the topic of the conversation was Aiden Ross says the N-word. I don't know if they were talking about Aiden Ross, but that was what was on the little caption of their video. Aiden Ross is Jewish. So anything that these people do, just like the incident in Dearborn, Michigan, where a politician is supposedly challenging Mark Rubio's seat, he's also Jewish, pretending to be Christian. Antagonizing. And this is what these people do, these proselytes. They antagonize using race. They need to use race, which is almost ironic because they're insecurity with their own race. They have to stir up Negro versus white because they don't want anyone to find out that they aren't from the land that they say they are from. But that has nothing to do with this conversation. The problem with Shannon Sharp is he's a Prince Hall Freemason. You don't get any platform, you don't get any notices to your platform if you aren't part of that organization or part of that fraternal order. If Shannon Sharp is a part of that organization, then Chad Johnson has somewhat to be part of that organization too. It's the same thing with these retired football players with that pivot podcast show where they used to be called I Am Athlete. Anytime you see somebody refer to themselves as I Am, I've seen this online with celebrities. I am this. Oh, for instance, Will I Am. It's to mock the Most High, saying that everybody is a god because the Most High said, tell my people I am who I say I am, or Ahaya. So if you listen to what movies say, like when they deliver it, they always say I am. Like for instance, Marvel at Endgame, when Robert Downey snaps his finger, he goes, I am Iron Man. It's basically to mock the Most High, trying to say that he is the God, like Satan is trying to be the God. But also the problem with that conversation is if you need celebrities to wake you up, you are already lost and you're already too far behind. Because the caption with that video I saw was, oh, they're waking up. Who wakes up and just says that the gay community is the most powerful community in the world? They are not the most powerful community. They don't have the numbers just like Jews don't have the numbers. So really, their power comes from other people's ignorance and other people's fear. That's where the power comes from. And that's what Satan uses. Satan uses fear. Fear of death, fear of embarrassment, fear of shame, fear of dying to yourself, fear of you losing your ego, your pride. That's Satan's thing. If people can't have control over something, it's fear. So the gay community is not the most powerful community in the world. But it's funny how Chad acts like he didn't know what he was talking about. And then, oh, they own everything. So you do know what he was talking about. How you go from, I don't know, I don't even know but two communities, then say, oh, the community that has a white and blue flag, oh, they own everything. So if they own everything, they must own you two Negroes. Because I posted on IG of Shannon Sharp putting his hands in a pyramid, and he's done this before. But like I said, to the blind, to the ignorant, to the willfully ignorant, they think this is waking up. That you rely on celebrities to, and that's what they do. They have to soft release truth. Because after a while, the noise from everybody else starts to get too loud. And I'm talking about the noise from other truthers gets to be too loud, where if they don't address something, it'll look like they are fake. And they're not in tune with what's going on in the rest of the world. That's why celebrities have to inch out the truth. Kanye has been superb at this. Saying the truth so you could ride with him a little bit longer. And then where did it go? Where did it end up at? It ended up at nowhere. Oh, you know, the Jews run this and the Jews run that and doing this and doing that. And then you see this brother apologizing to some rabbi, which was the same rabbi was dragging LeBron around at this wedding before he got his Nike deal. And then you see, what's his name? The rapper that Young Thug. Then you see him go over there and shake his hand. And like, it's so weird. But Shannon Sharp and Chad Ocho Johnson act like they're different from these particular Negroes. They are the same. All of them are the same. And the funny thing about Chad is, it was 3 or 4 years ago. I bumped into him at the time, I was in my other relationship, and we had taken our children rollerblading or roller skating. And Chad was there by himself roller skating. Literally. I don't roller skate, that ain't my thing. But his brother had like the inline skates, and he could skate pretty good. Like, he's been doing this since childhood. And I saw him, and same thing, had his glass shades on and all that in his own world. And then I said, what's up? And he goes, hey, I'd be like, hey, you know, I ain't doing nothing but just telling this truth. He said, yeah, but you know, it's the truth, you got to say it. And this is the time I went heavy on Twitter about Freemasonry, the occult, and all that. So he acted like he didn't know what Shannon Sharp was talking about, but he knew. He knew exactly what he was talking about. It's just a joke that people believe these people. They get on there and talk about absolutely nothing. But in order to drag more audiences into the conversation or into this so-called dying awakening, they get more likes, they get more subscriptions. They think, oh, because people want to know the truth, they want to know conspiracies. So let me go into this a little bit and say that they own everything and give very blanket statements and blanket information, and people will get excited. Because they feel like, oh, this person is now waking up. So if a celebrity wakes up, that, oh, I'm validated in what I know. I'm validated in the information that I saw. They can't go by what's in their ruach. They have to go by the validation of others. And this is this entire generation's problem. You're going to be way behind when it comes to waiting on people to validate your truth. Especially in this walk. Some of you are sitting on beautiful testimonies, but you won't share them because you're in fear of what people will say, what people will do, what they'll talk about you in the group chat, what they'll say behind your back. I mean, you act like Yahushua didn't have to go through this too. But like I said, people preserve their ego and pride and this image of themselves so they don't share their testimony, which could help others. I've been in this life long enough and played both sides to extremes of when you are wicked, you have friends that are wicked with you. You have people that will enable you when you're wicked. If you're all about living a lie, there are people that will be flocking around the block to help you live a lie. If you live the truth and if you change and you go through a period of embarrassment or shame, which is, I feel like it's necessary. I feel like embarrassment and shame is an undervalued emotion that people don't want to go through. When you go through embarrassment and shame, oh, it'll strip you from everything you think you are. And then when you rebuild yourself up, there are friends and there is a community that'll help and that'll engage with you to bring you to the fullness of your walk. Like, I didn't know any of you guys 4 years ago. Some of you I talk to regularly in email. But we wouldn't have nothing in common if it wasn't for this walk. It would be lonely if it wasn't for this walk and the fruit that you can get from it. So it changes. Just like you can have bad friends, you can have good friends. Just like you can have a community you can go into where people just do drugs, partying, and hanging out. It's the same way you people who want to search righteousness can go and hang out and be a community themselves. You will get everything back, but you get it a righteous way. You won't have to worry about people backbiting, hating on you, putting you in a gossip thread or a group chat. You ain't got to worry about that. You could be happy that people defend you in the group chat or defend your ruach or defend your walk with the Most High. But people don't want to turn over that leaf or give up themselves because it's the unknown. It's a comfort zone that people love to be in. You have to be willing to go into the unknown, especially when it comes to seeking Yah. You have to be willing to go into the unknown and to trust Him through your faith that He will awaken you. He will show you and guide you. The reason why most of these people rely on these celebrities to lead them and guide them is because they don't want to give up their comfort zone. They rather sit back and wait and allow other people to do it for them. So even if they've been thinking this way for a long period of time, if they've been thinking like this a long period of time, they just don't say anything. They just stay in the shadows. And you're not growing. You're just waiting. You're not growing. You're just waiting. Waiting in the water for something to happen or for somebody to validate something you say. Then you follow them and you follow this person, follow that person, follow that person. And it goes on and on and on. This whole Jeffrey Epstein situation, they ain't released nothing. All they did was just show you pictures of a massage parlor, show you pictures of what the rooms look like in that island. I mean, when you look at some of the video of what was going on in that island, you could see how they had children. They had chairs and they had bath houses and hot tubs behind the chairs and all this. Like, you could tell they were having a great time with these young girls and these children. But they didn't release nothing. They got supposedly their main culprit locked up, which I know she not locked up. They got their main culprit back there that could be snitching to be released from jail, yet she don't say nothing. And all they do is give you these fake check-ins, like, oh, she really is happy at this new facility that she's in. You really think somebody who's the daughter of the man who founded some of our textbooks is going to be sitting in prison? You think ever that the man who created that helped create the Mossad and the blackmailing of politicians and don't have a kill switch somewhere, that they would ever be having to sit in jail? There's no way in the world. They are indebted to that Maxwell family. Indebted. Indebted. There's no way in the world they will allow this woman to sit in jail with all the information she knows. No way. The same thing with Sean Combs. If he is doing exactly what his fraternal order is asked of him, which is to do blackmail with black celebrities and black musicians and black artists. That's what he's doing, basically the white version of Jeffrey Epstein. Because if you get black talent in a house just ran by white folk or Jewish white folk and they know about it, you're not going to get loose. You're not going to trust the environment that you're in, regardless of how much of a platform you want and how bad you want to be famous. You aren't going to unwind in a party or an environment where it's predominantly white. You are going to unwind when you see yourself partaking in the same debauchery as you. So the reason why they allowed Sean Combs to go on and on and on with this whole sex orgy ritual that he was doing is because he was giving the record companies information and how to trap these artists and these deals that they could never get out of. So people think that he's in jail. So of course they release these puff stories that, oh, he's in jail. Then they release fake AI videos of him being in jail. He ain't not in jail. There is not a Freemason that will ever sit in jail, especially the stuff that they know. Just like R. Kelly, they are not sitting in jail. They will never sit in jail. It's part of their ritual. It's part of their worship, is to do these type of events. Why would you sit in jail for something Satan has asked of you in an oath? I mean, no one would want to join the organization if you knew one day you would have to sit in jail for it. Come on. And then you see, surprisingly, I'm not into country music, but surprisingly, you start seeing people bringing up country music stars now trying to be demonic. Now they're trying to match and mirror what the hip hop community was doing, which what the rock star community used to do back in the 70s and 80s and the early 90s. Now it's attached itself to the country music. If anybody's seen Zac Brown, the country music star, his recent concert, this man had a medieval crown on, or something like a crown with a skull on it. And then it was a door, which it, when you look at it, you look up the video, the door looked like it was a cross. It was a red door and it opens up. It had souls, demons, this gigantic red skeleton just all around. I guess he was in that sphere in Vegas and it was just all around. It was like, there's no country music song that he could ever sing to validate that imagery. I mean, it was laughable, but people are starting to know it, notice. And it was a very fast jump from all of being about PG-13 country music to all of a sudden the imagery being satanic. Same thing with Brandon Lake. I don't know if any of you out there listen to Brandon Lake's music, that he also was trapped in doing some satanic ritual at his concerts. And now people are just using this. Everything is satanic. Everything is demonic. Everything is ritual. And now they're understanding. Every time you go into a concert, it's going to be some type of ritual. If it's one of these big stars that they're using for a, you know, for a propo, which is, you know, for propaganda, it's going to be somewhat a ritual. They're just trying to trap you in it. So if you listen to Brandon Lake and you sit in those concerts and you listen to God, Jesus, all the way he sings, and you just see like a bull come out of nowhere, then it gets you to accept this particular type of worship. It gets you to accept that this is your faith. This is why Freemasons indulge in Christianity more than any other religion, because it's a religion they know that it blends so much with the rest of the world. It's hard for them to go into, as a Freemasonry, go into Islam. I mean, it's kind of strict. There is a uniform and there's things you have to do. And people will look at you to see if you're praying 5 to 7 times a day. With Freemasonry and Christianity, you don't need that much. All you need to do is say God, Lord, Jesus, just like Charlie Kirk did, and then people will fool you. Or you can easily fool people. Like I said, people get trapped because they need an image. Like I said before in the last episode, people need an image to sit with, to validate their faith, to validate their walk. And it's only because of ego, pride, and not valuing the emotion of being embarrassment and shamed. And the reason why I say that is, and I've told this story before, is that before I woke up, I was destitute. I was desolate. I mean, I almost ran out of all my money. Truly, I ran almost all out of all my money from the league. I lost a $3 million signing bonus because I had gotten an incident in a nightclub. It was in Kansas City called Blonde. Ironic, right? But it wasn't, I didn't get into it with no white girl. It was a black girl, really. And she ended up suing me over something. I spit in her direction and she ended up suing me. And if I gotten arrested or in trouble with the league or suspended one game from the league office, that day I was going to lose $3 million. So I ended up losing $3 million in March. So I didn't, and then after that, 2 years after that, I was released. So when I came out of the league, I almost lost everything. And so I needed to go find a job. So I was living off of my old reputation. I was living off my image. I was like, oh, I might as well go into a reality show. That'd be my next thing. Most High shut that down. So once he shut that down, I was like, all right, maybe I go look for a job. And I got caught going to these jobs that, you know, some of you know about these jobs where you go in, it's like a pyramid scheme. And it's like with people who literally with no college education or nothing. And they, what they do is do door-to-door sales. And you can rise up only if you go door-to-door and ask these businesses if you can do their marketing campaigns. Which is like almost like a 3 out of 10 chance that any of these businesses that you go to would ever give you a chance to do their marketing. Especially when you have no portfolio, you have no, basically no experience in marketing. But I ended up falling so deep that I ended up selling boosted makeup. I didn't find this out till later. It was boosted makeup that this guy from New Jersey, who was already caught before boosting makeup and selling stolen goods in New York, he came down to Florida and had like women's makeup. I forgot what brand it was, but it was women's, something you would sell in Ulta. So it was boosted makeup, like a kit. And it came with some other stuff too, like eyeshadow, lipstick, brushes. And what he wanted us to do was go and sell this on the street to women. So, bro, I'm in a three-piece suit because I thought this was a real job. I'm in a three-piece suit in Miami at the height of the summer. So I was baking in humidity. And so I had another partner, and we were selling makeup to women. I mean, I maybe made about 2 or 3 sales. This brother was doing coke on the job. He was drinking on the job, and he had passed out in the car, and I had to go sell makeup by myself. And I was like, you know what? Why am I doing this? Like, I think this is enough. I was like, I'm not doing this. I ended up looking up the guy that sold the makeup, and I found that he was arrested, and he fled New York, New Jersey, and he was down there selling makeup, and he was using other kids and other people who didn't have a job or could ever get a job because they had no credentials. But they needed money out there selling makeup too. So I came back after making like a large sale, and I just kept the money. So what I did, I just kept the money. I sold the makeup and I kept the money. But the point is, that was embarrassment and shame. Like, if people saw me in the middle of the day in a three-piece suit selling makeup, it is embarrassing enough. It's shame enough. So that's when I was like, all right, I have to give up my own way and follow the Most High Yahuwah. Truly, I have to. If I'm going to get out of this rock bottom rut, I have to give up my own pride, my own ego, my own sense of self. I have to give that up. And it was a lesson for me. After that, I was humble. It really knocked me off my pedestal, where I wouldn't accept certain jobs or accept to be around certain things. And the Most High had to purge that out of me. I think everybody needs to go through embarrassment and shame. Even if it's publicly, it's something that I'm used to, which is why apologizing online or apologizing on my IG is something that's like second nature to me now compared to what I used to do. Like, I think back and look at, man, the stuff that I've done. I'm banned from the whole Power and Light District in Kansas City. I'm banned from there. I'm banned from the Bellagio Hotel. I'm banned from the Wynn Hotel in Florida. I'm banned from the Delano, and I'm banned from the Fountain Blue. Like, it's embarrassing and shameful enough. Like, people, hey, can we go here? I'm like, bro, I can't even go there. I can't even go in the parking lot to go to these places. But it's a reminder. And I just turn that shame and that embarrassment into strength. And I change that into a testimony. For people to understand, look how far you can go to the other way, to the left-hand path. And then look how further you can go to the extreme, to the other side, to the other way, to sit at his right hand instead of his left hand. Like I said, you guys are sitting on testimony, man, and y'all ashamed and embarrassed to even to go the extra mile to share that, share those stories, man. I don't know. You don't understand. There's people who are like you all over. And just you, they're looking, just like they're looking for celebrities, they're looking for someone to relate to so they can tell their story. That's the whole part of the Most High wanting us to be a light to the other nations or a light upon the world, because we have a testimony that we can share and say, hey, this is how we failed. But if you do this, this is how we also succeed. There's nothing to fear. If we aren't given the spirit of fear, there's truly nothing to fear, even with ourselves. So anyway, I want to go into the message of this brother Jamal sent me. I seen it before last year or a year before, and I shared it with my mom about this video I saw about Messiah 2030. You have to take it with, well, actually, you don't even have to watch all of the series. I'll put the link in the description. You don't have to watch all of the series. I just literally watched it to almost the end of the first one. And when he started getting into validating Israel being the real people, that's when, you know, he lost me. But if you listen to the beginning, I would say the first 45 minutes of this video, it will get you hooked because of how all of the scriptures overlap one another and the symbology or the numerology of these certain events match up so good that it sounds like we're really close to Yahushua's coming. Now, he's not trying to predict the exact day. He's just giving a timeline of how certain things sound and how certain things are compared to scripture. And he's very thorough with the scriptures that he's using. So that's why where I got the whole thing with Adam's death of being 930 years and being cut off for 70 years, which is what the Israelites went into captivity for 70 years, and the Most High said that the land will have a Shabbat of rest. So if Adam wasn't supposed to see his resting day, then that's the 70 years was a telltale sign that the Most High is true to word of what he was saying. Another one was when Yahushua was 12. Now, they only talk about Yahushua, his age, maybe twice, the other time him being 33, but they don't really go into his childhood or his adolescence or if he had hit puberty. Like, you don't get to hear these stories in the canonized scriptures. But you can learn a little bit about how the Most High set in stone everything. When he says, and I think it's Ezra Baruch, where he says that there is no moving the consummation of times. Like, everything is set. Like, the timeline that he's laid out, the past, present, and future at the same time, to have everything come to completion, it's already said and done. I said this before, like, the game has already been called. We are just living through the color commentary. But it's all said and done. The way the Most High set this world and set the timeline, you could actually see it if you read enough scripture, how everything is exactly where it's supposed to be. If you aren't prepared in time where the reaping comes, where the harvesting comes, then it's too late for you. He planted everyone in their due season and everyone to come into the fullness of their fruit, the fullness of their righteousness, and the path that they are chosen to follow. Everyone must come to the end of it. If you are not, you get caught in what's going to happen. And you'll either be tried based on if you know that you're ahead of the game or behind the game. That's how you'll know where you're supposed to be in your faith. If you start getting touch or a wave of this destruction starts to hit your household, it'll prove you to show you where you're actually at. So it's about hitting that door, that window of opportunity that we really truly don't know or see. We just hope that if we are in this walk long enough that we do not stumble or become a snare to ourselves, or turn back and become our old selves and return back into this world. Like, we don't want to get caught when this wave of destruction comes to test this entire world, not just America, but this entire world. So anyway, going to Luke 2, and I'm going to finish this chapter, is about Yahushua being a child and Miriam and Joseph going into Yerushalayim. I'm going to start at 23. It says, as it is written in the statutes of Yahuwah, every male that opens the womb shall be called holy to Yahuwah. and offer a sacrifice according to that which is said in the statutes of Yahuwah, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. Now, let me stop there. Now, for some reason, it's starting to hit my ruach that I need to go search for two turtle doves or two young pigeons. And I actually tried to look it up online. Turtle doves are like $700 for two or a piece. $700. They know they were that expensive. And it's not even that hard. They're very hard to come by. Like, I looked at some Australian ones that they were selling in New York or some in Florida. And then I saw two young pigeons that were like $300 to $500 in New York. And then you have to, you know, arrange your own transport. So because I'm having a son and because I want to follow the ancient path, I am seriously considering finding turtle doves or two young pigeons to offer as a sacrifice upon the altar. I don't know if I'm able to fulfill that statute, but I'm definitely going to ask the Most High if it's in my strength or in my wisdom to actually find these particular sacrifices to fulfill this statute. Those are the things you worry about when you end this walk and you just, it's what you worry about now. When you put your eyes on the Most High Yahuwah, you'll be amazed at the things you learn and the things He will allow you to do because you are seeking His statutes, His commandments, His ways. And behold, there was a man in Yerushalayim whose name was Shimon, and the same man was just and devout, waiting for the consolation of Yasharel, and the Ruach HaKodesh was upon him. And it was revealed unto him by the Ruach HaKodesh that he should not see death before he had seen Yahuwah's Mashiach. And he came by the Ruach into the temple, and when the parents brought in the child, Yahusha, to do for him according to the customary practices of the Torah, then took he him up in his arms and blessed Elohim and said, Yahuwah, now let your servant depart in peace according to your word, for my eyes have seen your Yeshua, which you have prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the other nations, and the glory of your people, Yasharel. And Yosef and his mother marveled at those things which were spoken of him. And Shimon blessed them and said unto Miriam his mother, behold, this child is set for the fall and rising again of many in Yasharel, and for a sign which shall be spoken against. Now, how would he know this if the Most High didn't already have this plan before Yahusha came into the world? Even if you read Daniel 7:9, it says particularly the Ancient of Days. That's a connection to Enoch, because Enoch would call the Most High Yahuwah the Ancient of Days. So it's like they knew that all of this was coming. Through the Ruach, the Most High prepared them generations before generations before generations that a Messiah was coming. He even said this in Genesis. There will be a righteous seed to stomp on the head of the serpent. It's just they didn't know what seed that would be. So, of course, all these other nations kept creating their own Messiah. They knew at that time that Yahusha was going to come into this world. They know the Most High ain't lying when he says the things that he says. They knew. You don't know what the angels or the fallen angels knew when they were in heaven. They could have already been talking about and planning out Yahusha the day that they made Adam. So they had to know that there was a Messiah was going to come, but they just didn't know when. They didn't know through what seed. They didn't know through what woman it was going to come through. It says, it's going to be the fall and rising again of many in Yasharel, and for a sign which shall be spoken against. Yeah, a sword shall pierce through your own soul also. That's also saying how, in what manner he would be touched. A sword shall pierce through your own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts be revealed. And there was one Kana, a prophetess, the daughter of Penuel of the tribe of Asher. She was of a great age and had lived with the man 7 years from her virginity. And she was a widow of about 84 years, which departed not from the temple, but served Elohim with fastings and prayers night and day. And she, coming in that instant, gave thanks likewise unto Yahuwah, and spoke of him to all them that looked for the redemption in Yerushalayim. And when they had performed all these things according to the statutes of Yahuwah, they returned into Galilee to their own city, Nazareth. And the child grew and waxed strong in the Ruach, filled with wisdom, and the grace of Elohim was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of Pesach. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. Now why, if they've been going every single year, why did they wait to mention that Yahushua was 12? Why not 11, 10, 9, 8, or 13, 14, 15, 16? Why do you think that now we are listening to him going to Jerusalem for Pesach at 12? Well, who was he around at the time of the last Pesach? 12. So it's truly remarkable how the Most High can breadcrumb us into his ways. That he's allowing us to search out a part of his wisdom. If you could understand the numerology of this world, it's so much more beautiful and awakening when you can understand the numerology that the Most High uses. And when it says that they went up, the reason why the biblical lands are in the southern hemisphere is because South Africa is at a higher elevation than northern Africa. So if you go through the Sefer, if you type go up or went up, or you just type in up to Jerusalem, you'll see so many verses of them talking about going up, going up, going up to Jerusalem. They have to go up to go there. Now, if you go to the fake land, and if you go to the fake land from Jerusalem to Nazareth, which is an hour's drive, if you look at the map, it shows that you have to go up a steep hill, not go down. And I'll talk about that in another verse. Verse 43, and when they had fulfilled the days as they returned, the child Yahusha tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. And when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. So, Yahusha left his family for 3 days, and they're going to find him the third day. And where he's at? The temple. And what did he tell his disciples? The Pesach. The 12. That he was going to what? Raise up the temple in 3 days. So the fact that he's connected to being at the temple, listening to the doctors and asking them questions, what do doctors do? They heal people from their sickness. They're healers. What is Yahusha without having a PhD? He's a healer. And when they found him, they turned back again to Jerusalem seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why have you thus dealt with us? Behold, your father and I have sought you sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is that you sought me? Knew ye not that I must be about my father's business? Imagine hearing this and both of y'all standing there. Imagine your child says this. What do you say? What do you do? Like your child, like, where have you been? You know how we gotten lost in Walmart and Burlington Coat Factory? I say that because it's easy to get lost in Burlington Coat Factory when you're a child. You know how you get lost in the store and somebody comes find you and you crying or whatever and your parents are upset? Like, where have you been? I thought you were gone. Like, whatever you imagine, like, I must be about my father's business. Like, it would just shake you to hear your child say this. And they understood not, saying which he spoke unto them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. See? And he went down with them and came to Nazareth. So then the elevation is going down from Yerushalayim. This is also key. There's a reason why they slip in these words that without the Ruach of Yahuwah, without the Ruach HaKodesh, without the obedience of Yah, these type of phrases skip people's minds. So Christians be in scripture reading this book, I would say 8 times out of the 10 times they go to church, they're listening to the New Testament, which is Mark, Luke, John. And they haven't figured out that they're talking about the topography of Yerushalayim. They're talking about the topography of the land, of the real land. So saying they went down, we think, oh, going downtown, which we're not actually going down in elevation or down in height, but just we're going down down the street somewhere. We use that in our way of understanding scripture, leaning on our own understanding. But if you actually start searching out some of these locations, searching out the land, then it starts making sense why they said that. Then it's much more deeper than just going down somewhere or going up somewhere. So I think that's amazing that Yahushua went through this, and it was a telltale sign of exactly what he would do. And I think even at 12, he knew exactly what his purpose in this life was. I just wish we'd heard more about him being young. And you would think that if you knew more about Yahushua being young, that if you were awakened at a young age, that you would actually be able to follow him a lot closer. If you heard about his adolescent days or his days of, I don't know, being 20, being 21, being 22, like, what did he do? Like, who was he hanging around? What was he teaching then? Or what, was he sitting in the temple just learning and listening? And imagine almost being a genius in the Ruach, and you have to sit around, and you have to sit around and listen to other people muddle up your father's words. Like, it is truly, you have to be humbled. You have to have a sense of understanding of what your true purpose is. Like I said, like, how many of you who would have to know, it's like going, walking into fourth grade. If you have to sit in a fourth grade classroom, how many of you could you just sit there and just listen to teachers teach something completely wrong that you know the answer, you know far more knowledge than they know, but you have to somewhat respect them and be quiet so you don't have to spill that what you're actually there for when you listen to certain truths. I think that's amazing. I think that's amazing, especially for Yah, for Yahushua, for us to truly understand and seek out the scriptures, to learn for ourselves what this walk is truly all about. And it's really all about stripping down your ego, your pride, your sense of self. And the Most High will definitely give you the Ruach, give you the information, give you the foreknowledge to understand his wisdom. And it comes with being wrong most of the time. I think this generation has an issue with being wrong. As if being wrong is like going to hell. It's supposed to humble you. Being wrong humbles you. Period. It shows you that you do not know everything. And if you don't like the feeling of being wrong, you research. You make sure. At the day, you research. You study to show thyself approved. But this walk is, this awakening is starting to dwindle down. You're not seeing as much people awake anymore because it's spread all over the place. And I think this for a reason too. At the end of the day, like I said, if you are waiting on your algorithm or your timeline or your FYP to change to awaken you, you're already behind the game. Because all of our moves now, we have, and all of our works, we put ourselves in a perfect place to be fortified. Building your house on a rocky foundation, which means sturdy foundation. That it cannot be moved, that the waves cannot beat against it. This is why this awakening is slowly coming to an end. Because it's people who haven't known the truth, aren't changing themselves because of the truth, are just looking at it online and say, oh, I'm so glad I know this. Let me share this with somebody else. And their moves are not dictating by the truth that they find out. So if I keep posting about how we should love and worship the Most High Yahuwah, and people aren't doing that, you are not fortifying yourself. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, it's cool. But you're not fortifying yourself in order for you to be tested. You would need to be tested on your faith and your works. They keep saying faith without works is dead. So how are you going to prove that the Most High is working for you? How are you going to prove that you love him? So when the test comes, when the wave of destruction comes, it'll be too late. Just like it was already set in stone what Yahushua came to do. And they were telling the Israelites over and over again, somebody's going to come. Somebody's going to come. Even John, somebody who's more worthy of me is going to come, whose shoes I'm not able to latch. He's going to come. Somebody's going to come. And people had to prepare. You start doing exactly what he wants you to do, or you don't. And you let whatever happens with that, happens. That'll show you if you're really protected by the Most High or not. But I'm saying, why wait? Why test the waters to see if you're actually doing things right? I don't see how people are truly confident right now. I don't think I could ever be that confident to be like, okay, what I'm doing is going to fortify my household. So that's why I keep doing more or wanting to do more. Now, it's not about working for protection or working for salvation or working to be blessed. It's if I don't feel like I'm doing enough, how can I prove to the Most High that I love him? After all that I've done in my life, my former life, how much I loved sin. And to a point where you didn't even know if you loved sin. You just did what you wanted to do. You did what was comfortable. You did what you liked. You didn't see it as being sin, because some of us as Christians were going into churches, sitting in Sunday school or sitting in Sundays, you know, giving money in the collection plate. And then two days later, we was drunk in the club. Or we were drunk in the club Saturday and went into church. And really didn't feel no thing about it. Didn't feel guilty, didn't feel shame. But we loved that life of being fake holy. So now when you've been given this new life and you're dead to this world, shouldn't you do the extreme opposite? Shouldn't you search and do more for the Most High? You could never repay him back. Just like you could never repay Yahushua for what he's done. But you keep going. Your Ruach urges you on. If your Ruach has you stagnant right now, there's something that you are not doing and there's something that you're not focusing on. Your day-to-day life that's causing you or causing your Ruach to be stagnant. Like I said, I don't know how people are comfortable, especially Christians. They truly believe, and I get it. I understand the feeling of feeling like you do these holidays so good that you feel that spirit of, you feel like what you're doing is right because everyone is happy. You being blessed that you're not struggling. You're blessed that you're not being evicted. You're blessed because you're keeping your job. And the whole time you're doing this, you're doing these pagan feast days that the Most High hates. And he's not going to tell you that he hates them because he's already told you in scripture that he doesn't like them. And truly, he's not going to deter you from it, because in the last days, in the end times, what does it say in Revelation? Let he that be righteous still. Let him be wicked still. So that coordinates with the scripture of the wheat and tare, where he told the angel, do not harvest yet, because if you harvest the evil seeds, you'll pull up the righteous ones with it. So let them come to the fullness, so you know exactly who which one are. Then you could take the tares and burn them up and then take the wheat and harvest them and bring them into the barn. So, really. So it's really on you. That's why I like the fourth book, Ezra 2, verses 27-29. Be not weary, for when the day of trouble and heaviness comes, others shall weep and be sorrowful, but you shall be merry and have abundance. The heathen shall envy you, but they shall be able to do nothing against you, says Yahuwah. My hands shall cover you so that your children shall not see Sheol. That comes from works. And it's in Ezra, when Ezra told that he shouldn't number himself with the sinners and the wicked ones, because he has a treasure of works stored up. And Ezra didn't even see death. Ezra was taken up or raptured away. And he was obedient from his youth up, holy and righteous. They keep giving us examples of how to get up there or how to be amongst the Most High. And that's through being obedient and righteous. And he would not lower his bar because you love to do the holidays so much. He is not lowering his bar because you don't have a backyard to do ascending smoke offerings. He's not lowering his bar because you want to keep going into these churches and giving to the building fund. It's much more easier than tithing from your own resources. So that's about it. So it's really on you. I know it's hard for you new believers in this walk, especially around these holiday seasons, because you're gonna get guilt tripped. And people are gonna act like you not being around them for some reason is gonna destroy the continuity of their feast day or their continuity of their holiday spirit. I know some of you younger ones that are listening for the first time and are new to this walk. You got to stand firm and read Yochanan, which is John 15, 18 through 21. If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If ye were of the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Adonai. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they will have guarded my word, they will guard yours also. But all these things they will do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. And this goes to people who think they know the Most High God and think they know Yahusha. If you don't even know his real name, you definitely don't know Yahusha. So Yahusha went through all this for us to show us that someone who was completely perfect in this walk was still talked about, still not believed, not respected, beat on, spit on, broken. There's really no excuse for you to not to share your testimony. There's really no excuse. There's really no excuse for you not to pull away from your family members at a time of these holiday pagan rituals. No excuse. Start to set your house in order now, so when the wave of destruction comes, it can already be built. It can already be in order. It can already stand the test of time, because other tests will come to strengthen you to get you to that point. But if you're lacking and lazy and you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're going to be caught up in this test when the wave is much more powerful than your faith. And you're going to have to fight all your days trying to reprove or trying to correct the hole in the chink in your armor or the chink in the wall to withstand the next blast that's going to come. And I'm telling you, it's going to come. It's been so quiet right now when it comes to all these agendas that they've been talking about and wanting to pull on the American people or wherever you are in your respective countries when it comes to the economic crisis. It's got to happen all around the world. Everything has to fall simultaneously. And it's right now, it's quiet. Right now, you're getting a little ritual here and there, but right now it's quiet for them. That means they lullabying everybody to sleep, lullabying everybody asleep. until it's ready to really be trapped. And then what you going to do? The Most High will prepare us because he knows that time is coming for us. So he knows that he has to keep us protected for his name's sake, to keep us going, because this is the reason why we pray. This is the reason why we do the feast days. This is the reason why we offer. He will prepare us. Being close to him, we are telling him we need guidance. If we separate ourselves from him and do our own thing, we're telling him that we're good on our own. And because he loves us, he has to pull us in. And the way he's going to pull us in is allow some of us to get hit with some of these waves. For us to realize, hey, you ain't doing all that you need to be doing. So it's on you. Too much is given, much is required.